Father Jacob, he wrestles with this angel. There's much to say about that and a lot to understand about it. Let's just say that it was a miracle, an extraordinary event, where a creature from a different dimension entered Yaakov's dimension, or the dimension in which we live, and a significant struggle ensued. And in the end, Yaakov emerges unscathed, relatively. So the third reading, which is chapter 32, verse 31, opens with Yaakov Avinu, after having had Esav's alter ego, the spiritual force that came from another dimension, entered into our realm and struggled with Yaakov, and Yaakov having overcome this. And now he blesses, which as we have learned means the angel acknowledges, the spiritual force or energy field of Esav acknowledges that the blessings belong to Yaakov. So now, after all this business of name changes and Yaakov's name change and Yaakov asking the angel what your name is and not getting a response, Vayikra Yaakov Shem Hamokim, Yaakov now refers, Jacob calls the name of this place Peniel. Why does he call the name of the place Peniel? Hiroisi Elokim Ponim El Ponim, because I have seen the divine face to face. Vatenotzel Nafshi. And I have nonetheless been saved. And there's a dispute amongst our sages if the word Elokim here refers to God, and therefore it's a Shem Kodesh, and that has special halachas that govern it. For example, it can't be erased or blotted out, Chas V'Shalom, or that it means it has the terminology of Lord, lording, lording over, or sovereign, and it refers to the angel. At any rate, Yaakov Avinu saw or contended and faced off with something very, very unusual. To the best of our knowledge, nobody before or after has ever endured such a nocturnal experience in which they wrestled with an angel or with a divine creature of force. So Yaakov calls the name of this place Peniel, as if to say, I have seen Pnei Kael, the face of God. Rashi says that when Yaakov Avinu walks away from there, Rashi doesn't say. However, the Or HaChaim says, did Yaakov not, he asks, did Yaakov not see angels before? The whole last parsha is about Yaakov seeing angels in his dream, in a nocturnal vision, and then when he comes back, he sees them in a conscious state, and he dispatches angels. So why was Yaakov so overwhelmed by having seen an angel? So Or HaChaim says, that's the emphasis here is panim el panim, kere'isi elikim panim el panim, face to face. And face to face is indicative of what we would call in today's day and age a face-off. There's an actual struggle, a face-off. And a face-off or a direct struggle is something Yaakov had never experienced. And he's grateful. He's grateful. Thanks Hashem. It's a miracle. Verse 32. Vayizrach loy Hashemesh. The sun rose for him. Kasher over es Penuel. As he passed this place, he limps now on one of his hips. Vayizach loy Hashemesh. The sun rose for him. I mean, I know Yaakov has a healthy self-esteem. The sun rose for him. Does the sun rise for you or for me? Can a person actually really believe that the sun rose for them? Why would the Torah say that? So the Bereishis Rabba says, obviously the sun rose for everybody, obviously. However, the sun rose for everybody and brought everybody light. For Yaakov, it brought healing. And that's why the Pasuk says, Vayizach lo yashemesh, and the sun rose for him and he was limping, but that he's gonna be healed by this. Now, the Targum Yenison Ben Ezeel says something very interesting. If you remember, when Yaakov Avinu set out in last week's Parsha, the sun set on him. And we learned that the sun set prematurely. So Yaakov came to Har HaMoriah, and the sun set, so he had to spend the night there. And that was Hashem's way of ensuring that he would fall asleep and have this magnificent nocturnal vision, that dream, the vision. So here, the sun actually made up for the time that it lost then. Sun set prematurely, now it rose prematurely. Obviously, it rose and set for everybody. However, ultimately, it was all about Yaakov. It did actually rise for him. The Maharsha in Maseches Chulin, where on page 91, there's a whole narrative, side A, this is onto side B, on that page of Gemara about Yaakov Avinu and his journeys and his sojourns. So the Maharsha says there that in the dark, Yaakov was susceptible to this attack. He could have been harmed, and he had to contend with the Malach. But once the sunlight came, the Malach can no longer be there, and he can no longer harm him. That's why he said, you have to send me, because I can only go out when it's dark at night. I can't go out when the sun is shining. And that's the meaning of Vayizach Loi HaShemesh, that from this point and onward, Yaakov was safe. Rashi says, Vayizach Loi HaShemesh, that the sun rose for him. So Rashi addresses this obvious question, that the sun rise for Yaakov, and he says, L'shein b'nei Adam hu. It's a euphemism. People speak this way. When people speak about an event that took place, they'll say, and then the sun rose for me. It doesn't mean for me only. Meaning, kishegiyanu, l'makoyim pleini, when we reach this and this place, heir lana Hashemesh, the sun rose for us. This is pshute, zeo pshute. That's the straightforward, simplest meaning. However, the fact is, it still says in the Torah, v'yizach loy. So there has to be some kind of deeper meaning. It can't just be euphemism. Why does the Torah employ that euphemism in this case? Why does the Torah emphasize that the sun rose or shone, had shone just for him? So therefore, Rashi now introduces us to a medrash, or medrash agada. The agadic medrashic interpretation is, Yizrach loi, the sun rose for him, litzarkoi, for his needs. And here Rashi invokes the Bereshis Rabbah that we just mentioned, and he says, it was lirapais es tzilosa, to heal his limp. As it's written in the book of Malachi, Shemesh tzedakah umarpe bichnofeha, that the sun brings goodness and the solar energy brings healing. Now Rashi also invokes the Targum Yenisim ben Aziel, and he says, and when the sun had prematurely set b'shevilai in order for Yaakov to remain where he had to go, kishiyotzim in Be'er, when he went out from Be'er Sheva en route to Charon, so now miharal izroyach b'shevilai. Now the sun had prematurely risen, so the time is made up. Sun set prematurely, why? For Yaakov. Sun rose prematurely, once again for Yaakov. V'hutzei Leia, he's limping. Rashi says, ho yotzei Leia, he was limping, kishazorcha Hashemesh, when the sun rose. However, once the sun rose, he was no longer limping. The Torah now tells us, Al Kain, because of all this, L'yechlo b'nei Yisrael es gidah nasha. The Jewish people will not eat. The children of Israel did not eat the gidah nasha. Asher al kaf hayareach, which is on the spoon, the ladle area of the hip. Ad hayem azeh, until this very day. Why? Because the Malach had touched him and dislocated that hip, that joint. So because that joint was dislocated, this is the reason that until the end of time, you don't get sirloin steak. Because the hindquarters of the animal contain within them the Gidan Nosha. And the Gidan Nosha is very difficult to remove. And as such, since it would be such a labor-intensive, time-consuming process, that it would require an enormous amount of funding to pay the person who did all this so that you can get your piece of steak, which anyway is kind of ruined by the time you take it to Gidan Nosha. It doesn't look like that Ruth Chris steak, you know, that big steak. When they finish chopping it up, it looks like pieces of a steak. So therefore, we just don't eat that whole sirloin steak. But really, what's prohibited is the Gidan Nosha. Al Kain, therefore, what is the Gidan Nosha? That's why we don't need the Gidan Nosha. So Rashi tells us, why is it called Gidan Nosha? Literally, Gidan Nosha means the sinew that sprang. Loma nikra shmei Gidan Nosha. And he says, Lafi, because. Shenoshe, because it sprang, mimikoyim from its place, va'ala, and it suddenly moved, it was dislocated. V'hu lashon kfitza, that comes from the terminology of springing or jumping. V'chein, noshsa gvurasam. This is an expression in the book of Yirmiyahu, where he says, their strength, their valor, sprang from them, meaning it suddenly left them. V'chein, similarly, kinoshani alikim es kol amali. This is not speaking about a physical phenomenon, physical strength, or something about the physical body. The truth is that here, where Gid HaNasha is described here, it's talking about something very specific. The actual Gid, the actual area of the body, a sinew sprang. So there is no corollary anywhere in the Chumash that speaks about a part of the body that springs. What there is in Yirmiyahu is talking about the strength that's associated with corporeality, although it's not a corporeal movement. So that Rashi quotes Yirmiyahu first. Here, the second quote, although it's a prior quote and it comes from the actual Chumash, and it's in this book, it's in the book of Bereishis, where Yosef HaTzadik says, Nashani Elikim es kol amali, God has enabled me to forget all of my suffering, all my misfortune, all my agony has sprang from me. This is entirely proverbial. It has no corporeal connection whatsoever. That's why, even though it's Bereishis, and the first pasuk that Rashi brought is from the book of Yirmiyahu, nonetheless he brings the first pasuk first, the second pasuk first, because the second pasuk in some way relates to corporeality, whereas the second one is entirely metaphoric and proverbial. But at any rate, that's the idea of the Gid HaNasha, and we don't need it. Rashi talks about why it's called kafei erech, he uses a French word, fulpa belaz, and he says, kol basa goveya v'toli v'ogul, all flesh, which is, so to speak, hangs or is rounded, kore kaf, it's called a ladle or a spoon. Kamoi ad she yismarech ha-kaf, until, this is a Rashi, which we learned earlier, and it means b'simane bagros, it can also be seen in the Torah's description of puberty, or a woman coming of age where her hips begin to change, where little girls and little boys look the same, and then their figures form. So it's called spoon. That's the terminology that's used. All right, so why don't we eat the Gid HaNasha? Why don't we eat this meat? It's Alkain. It's not so common, but the Torah gives us a reason. Because Yaakov's Gid HaNasha sprang, and because he was limping, Alkain, that's why we shouldn't eat it. So there's different explanations in the Chazal and the Rishonim. We're going to focus on the explanation of the Rashbam. Rashi does not really talk about the Alkain. It doesn't tell us, so why. Torah says, Alkain, therefore. Please open your Biurim book to page Kuf Chav Dalet. And here, the Rebbe begins with a quote from the Rashbam. Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, the grandson of Rashi, who also wrote a commentary on the Chumash. And he says, Alkain lo yeichlu, therefore they shouldn't eat, lezichroin gvurasai shel Yankev, so that we might remember the valor and the might of our father Jacob, the nes shenasalei, and the miracle that happened to him. Shaasa lo yakodesh baruch that God performed for him, shalom mate, that he didn't die. Because when creatures come from a fourth dimension or beyond, and they enter into our realm, you usually don't live to tell the tale. When that creature leaves, he takes you with him. Usually the creature that comes from that realm is not seen, but when he leaves with you, you don't come back. It's called the Malach HaMavis. The angel of death comes from another realm and basically harvests the soul and takes the soul with him. So here, Father Jacob came face to face with a creature from another realm, from another parallel universe, from another dimension. He wrestled with him. He suffered an injury, but he did not die. And that's extraordinary. And because of that extraordinary miracle, that's why we have this prohibition on sirloin steak. And clearly, there's an unmistakable miracle that happened there. Okay. So the Rebbe begins to analyze this statement and this mitzvah. We have a mitzvah to commemorate this miracle, right? It's like an unmistakable miracle that requires this unmistakable diet. We're not going to have that steak. The Torah mesuper al nisim rabim. The Rebbe says the Torah talks, narrates many, many miracles. Shenasa la'avis, that happened to our patriarchs. V'gam li'ankev atzmi, miracles that happened to Yaakov himself. The imzais, despite all this, Raklin Nesze, it's only this miracle, the miracle shall Hatzolas Yankev, of the saving of Father Jacob, Misare shall Esav, from the spiritual alter ego, archangel of Esav, Nikva Zecher Lederis, that this became established as something which we have a permanent memory of, a persistent observance, Al Kain. Therefore, Adayim Azeh, until this very day, meaning for posterity. For posterity, our diets are affected in how we commemorate this miracle that happened to Yaakov. Ubitam Adavar, in order to better understand this, what does that mean? Why aren't we eating that kind of meat? And why is it that this, of all the miracles, must be commemorated for the duration of time as we know it. So the Sefer Achinuch says, Shabbat Solas Yankiv Miyatzari Shalesov, that in this narrative of Yaakov Avinu, who wrestles with this dark force, this angel, who is the Tsar of Esav, Yesh Mashmois Klolus Bechai Yam Yisrael. This represents a very, very broad and general message. In fact, an overarching message for the life and narrative for the existence of the Jewish people. In the words of the Sefer Achinuch, quote, Remez, this is an allusion, a hint, Li Yisrael, Sha'af al pi sheyavru tzoreis rabes begolos, that even though we will experience many, many challenges and difficult times, miyad ha'amim in the hands of the nation, umiyad bnei Esav in the hands of the children of Esau, many difficult challenges. Nonetheless, sheyiyu betuchim, we shall be certain and place our trust in God, shalo yevedu, that we will never be lost. Ela yamid zaram, our people are an eternal people, we are here forever, regardless of what they will do to delegitimize, to harm, to attack, to maim, rachman al-tzan, even to kill. They will never succeed in destroying us. And we will always be here. And the story, the narrative that encapsulates the fortunes of the Jewish people, all of our struggles, and our ultimate victory is all encoded into the unmistakable miracle of Yaakov's wrestling with the angel. So the Rebbe asks a simple question. All right, let's accept this. Let's say that Yaakov's wrestling with an angel is really a representation of Israel's proverbial wrestling with the darkest forces, with all our enemies, with all our trials and travails. It's all encapsulated in this little narrative. All right. So, if the reason that we need to have a persistent observance to constantly bring to mind this miracle, and this is because it represents Hatzola Kloli, a general salvation, B'chai Yam Yisrael, so the Rebbe asks, would it not yet be more appropriate and suitable l'chayre lizker es hanes b'mtsoyis dover hamevata es hatzolos yankev? Shouldn't we do something to actively commemorate and remember what happened to Father Jacob? Wouldn't it be a nicer, more meaningful way of commemorating this miracle rather than an iser of achilas gedanasha? Don't eat that sinew. Avoid that piece of meat. Hametzayin rak prak koton. It only alludes to a tiny detail. It's almost like a something that's a sideshow. That's not what this is about. If you ask somebody to, you know, sum up this the great miracle or the meaning of this event, you say, well, the meaning of this event is Yaakov was limping. No, the meaning of this event is that Yaakov contended with a force that's beyond this realm. And we, the Jewish people, contend with forces that really stretch the limits of our imagination. It's impossible to conceive of what the Jewish people have faced over the last thousands of years, over millennia, and how we've survived. It's inexplicable. It shatters all glass ceilings and all statistics, and it's off the charts, and it makes no sense. And yet we're still here to tell the tale. This is not a story about a limp that was healed a few minutes later when the sun rose. This is not a story about a sinew that sprang. This is a story of a struggle. This is a story of them or trying to harm us, inundate us, overwhelm us, and us surviving. So what do we focus on? A tiny detail, which really kind of appears almost as a postscript to the story. And that becomes the observance. Yesedemizu, even more so. Leizu bovacha zeichel enesu rak beprat katan. Not only is it that this massive, impossible to overestimate miracle is commemorated or marked with a tiny observance or a detailed of the observance. If you look into it, there are many limitations. It's not even, it's anything but overarching. It's a detail of a detail. So for example, if you take a look in the Gemara, Meseches Chulin on page 89, where this is discussed, you'll see that the Isser is Dafka Begid Shal Kafa Yerech. It's only the sinew that's found on an actual thigh. And therefore, for example, when it comes to eating poultry, Oif doesn't have a thigh, that's it. He also has a gid. But the gid, Hanasha, of a bird, of poultry, is permitted. No issues in drumsticks. You can eat all the pulkas you want. Why? What about the gid Hanasha? Not an issue. He doesn't have a yerech. He doesn't have an actual hip. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, It's only the Yerech Yimin Shel Behemah. He said it's only the right sirloin steak. You can have sirloin steak, he says. If as long as it's from the left side. But the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. But that, I'm just saying, that's what the Gemara says. Mikivin Shah Malach Noga Bekafa Yerech Shel Yankiv, because he touched him on the right side, not the left side. It was only one of the Gidim that was dislocated. So if you think about it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's hardly even noticeable, the miracle. Somebody would sit and have sirloin steak and say, is this from the right side of the animal or the left side of the animal? I know. I don't. How would I know? How could he even tell? Vasiba lakach. Incidentally, the reason that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and Allah is like the Chachamim, and they say the Isser is b'shnei agidim b'yiminu b'smoil who rak b'shum shaladai l'day tam ha-malach yikol b'pel b'shnei atzadadim. They don't say because Rabbi Yehuda is wrong, we have to eat, can't eat both sides because maybe you'll get mixed up. Not even. The Chachamim say that Yaakov actually was slammed on both sides. The Malach hurt him on both sides. That's a question. How bad a limp was it? Was he limping on one leg or limping on both legs? Any movement. This is like totally not understood. If we speak here about a general concept, we speak here about something which is massive, something which is, represents the general saga of the Jewish people, so then it's something which is merkazi, it's central to Toldos Am Yisrael. The story of the Jewish people is encapsulated in this narrative. What do I mean? Dealing with this minutia, the right side, the left side, how did the sinew spring? How much of it is prohibited? It seems so petty when we're dealing with something which is so important. So the Rebbe gives a very unusual answer, very interesting answer. He says, Adrab, that is the point. Since the whole purpose, the whole message here of this prohibition, because the Jewish people have very great importance. Our story is of cosmic importance. Bein HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the eyes of God. And you should know that because our story is of cosmic importance, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is mashgiach v'shoymer aleihem b'chol zman, that God is always watching over us. And even though it seems sometimes that history unfolds in a haphazard manner, it's not so chas v'shalom. That really and truly HaKadosh Baruch Hu is each and every moment is supervising and guiding us. And anu muvatim zikar en zeh, we therefore express this memory, this observance, b'emtzois prat katan, in what seems to be an almost insignificant detail. In order to teach us, that even the smallest of details, which you look at and say, it's just a detail. It's just a postscript. In Chayam Yisrael, in the life and times, in the saga of our nation, you should know that that's Negim LaKadosh Baruch Hu. God doesn't only care about Klal Yisrael, the plurality, the nation of Israel. God cares about Prat Yisrael, or as they used to say in Europe, Reb Yisrael, the individual. I had a great aunt. Her name was Rebbe Simchaika Hecht from Chicago. And she was going to Israel for her first granddaughter's wedding. So she stopped in New York. And the chassan is an Israeli boy. He was in yeshiva in New York at the time. And he was going for Israel. So he was flying together with his wife's grandmother. And before they went to the airport, they stopped outside the Rebbe's room and they received a bracha. So my great aunt said to the Rebbe, as he was walking into his room after mincha, the Rebbe zol haben nachas von Klal Yisrael. The Rebbe should have nachas from the Jewish people. So the Rebbe turned around and he said to her, un euch von Prat Yisrael, and also from individuals. Meaning sometimes we talk about Klal Yisrael. We use this broad, overarching terminology. But the truth is, it's in the details. It's in the details. It's in Prat Yisrael. A person could ask himself the question, I know the Jewish people are important, but am I important? I know that our big, overarching story is one of cosmic significance, but is my life significant? Are the details of my life meaningful? And we have to know that Kafisha Anuroyim B'tchunas Nafshe Shaladim, just as we see within the human persona, that kasher inyan mesuyim negele be'imak nafshei, if something is really important to you, you know, we have on occasion things of great importance to us. So harikol prat katan, every tiny detail, everything which seems like a tuffa, like ancillary detail, hakasher inyan zeh, if it's about this, it's choshev negele, it's very important. people plan a wedding, down to the little details, down to the nines. Every detail is important. What's the difference? A detail. Focus on the big stuff. No, no. Because when it's something of great importance, then every tiny, seemingly insignificant petty detail becomes extremely important. And we actually find this about the Torah itself. Somebody who says that the Torah is not from God, even if he says one verse of the Torah, afilu teva achas, even if he says one word of the Torah, harei ze kofer b'Torah, says the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva, if you deny one word of the Torah, if you deny one letter of the Torah, then it's as if you deny the whole Torah. Vein hevdil, it makes no difference. Imedubar b'pasuk or isik b'inyan ikri, if you're talking about a verse that addresses something major, a major theme for the Jewish people, like Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and in hevdil, says that in the words of the Rambam, in hevdil beinu b'nei cham, Kush u'mitzrayim, that the children of Cham were Kush and Mitzrayim. Do I give a hoot about Cham? A lousy guy who assaulted his own father. Why do I want to hear about him? It doesn't matter. Everything has meaning. Everything has a message. Even down to the details. Or Shem Ishtoi, the name of his wife was Mahatveil. I can't remember some guy who walked the face of the earth 38 centuries ago, 4,000 years ago, what the name of his wife was. Or Timna Hoyse Pelegesh. Timna was the concubine, not even the wife. And then I have Sukkim like, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. Shema Yisrael. No, Rambam says no difference. Hakol mipi hagvura. Everything comes from the proverbial mouth of the might. It all comes from God. Hakol Teres Hashem Tamima, all of it's God's perfect Torah. And in the same way we understand that every nuance, every detail of Torah is important, my dear friends, in the Rebbeinu Shlom's eyes, every Yid is important. And every detail in our history is important. And that's why when we have a little story which is oversized in its importance and represents the big picture for the Jewish people, we commemorate that miracle with a tiny little detail. For no detail is insignificant, and no small amount of involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Am Yisrael is insignificant or can be overlooked or pushed aside. That should inspire us all.